Darkness. Sam Vimes struggled up the hill, tired to the bone. It was warm, warmer than he'd expected. Sweat stung his eyes. Water splashed under his feet and made his boots slip. And ahead, up the slope, a child was screaming. He knew he was shouting. He would hear the breath wheezing in his throat, could feel his lips moving, but he couldn't hear the words he was reciting over and over again. The darkness felt like cold ink. Tendrils of it dragged at his mind, his body slowing him down, dragging him back. And now they came at him with flames. Vimes blinked and found himself staring at the fireplace. The flames flicked peacefully. There was the swish of a dress as Sybil came back into the room, sat down, and picked up her darning. He watched her dully. She was darning his socks. They have maids in this place, and she darned his socks. It wasn't as if they didn't have so much money that they could have a new pair of socks every day. But she'd picked up the idea that it was a wifely duty, and so she did it. It was comforting, in a strange sort of way. It was only a shame that she wasn't, in fact, any good at mending holes. So Sam ended up with sock heels that were huge welts of crisscrossing wool. He wore them anyway, and never mentioned it. "A weapon that fires flame," he said slowly. "Yes, sir," said Carrot. "Dwarfs have weapons that fire flame. The Deep Downers use them to explode pockets of mine gas," said Carrot. "I never expected to see them here." "It's a weapon if some bastard points it at me," said Vimes. "How much gas did they expect to find in Ankh-Morpork, sir?" "Even the river catches fire in a hot summer." Okay, I'll grant you that," said Vimes, conceded unwillingly. "Make sure the word gets out, will you? Anyone seen above ground with one of those things will shoot first, and there will be no point in asking questions afterwards." "Good grief, that's all we need. Have you got anything more to tell me, Captain?" "Well, afterwards, we did get to see Ham Crusher's body," said Carrot. "What can I say? On his wrists, the draught that identifies him, and his skin was pale. There was a terrible wound on the back of his head. They say it's Ham Crusher. I can't prove it. What I can say is that he didn't die where they said he did, or when they said he did." "Why?" said Vimes. "Blood, sir," said Sally. "There should have been blood everywhere. I looked at the wound. What that club hit over the head was already a corpse, and he wasn't killed in that tunnel." Vimes took several slow breaths. "There was so much bad stuff here, you needed to take it one horror at a time." "I'm worried, Captain," he said. "Do you know why? It's because I've got a feeling that very soon I'm going to be asked to confirm that there's evidence that a troll did the deed, which, my friend, will be like announcing the outbreak of war." "You did ask us to investigate, sir," said Carrot. "Yes, but I didn't expect you to come back with the wrong result. The whole thing stinks. That clay from Quarry Lane was planted, wasn't it?" "It must have been. Trolls don't clean their feet much, but walking mud all the way? Not a chance." "And they don't leave their clubs behind either," growled Vimes. "So it's a setup, right?" "But it turns out there really was a troll." "Was Angua sure?" "Positive, sir," said Carrot. "We've always trusted her nose before. Sorry, sir, she had to go and get some fresh air. She was straining her senses as it was, and she got a lungful of that smoke. I can imagine," said Vimes. "Hell's bells," he thought. "We were right on the point where I could tell veterinary that it looked like some kind of half-baked inside job, faked to look as though a troll did it. And we find out there was a troll. Huh. So much for relying on the evidence." Sally coughed politely. "Ardent was shocked and frightened when the captain found the skull, sir," she said. "It wasn't an act, I'm certain of it. He was near collapse with terror, so was Helm Clever, the whole time." "Thank you for that, Lance Constable," said Vimes gravely. "I suspect I shall find some way that I go out there with a megaphone and shout, 'Hello, boys, welcome to the replay of Coombe Valley. Hey, let's hold it right here in the city.'" "I don't think you should actually put it like that, sir." "Well, yes, I'll probably try to be a bit more subtle since you mentioned it," said Vimes. "And it'd be at least the 16th battle referred to as Coombe Valley," Carrot went on, "or 17th, if you include the one in Villainous Pass, which was more of a fracas. Only three of them were in the original Coombe Valley. The one immortalized in Rascal's painting. It's said to be quite accurate. Of course, it took him years. "An amazing work," said Sybil, not looking up from her darning. "It used to belong to my family before we gave it to the museum, you know." "Isn't progress a wonderful thing, Captain?" said Vimes, pouring as much sarcasm into his tone as possible, since Carrot was so bad at recognizing it. "When we have our Coombe Valley, our friend Otto will be able to take a color iconograph of it in a fraction of a second." "Wonderful. It's been a long time since the city was last burned to the ground. He ought to be springing into action. Once upon a time, he would have done. But now, perhaps..." He should take these precious moments to work out what he should do before he sprang. Lambs tried to think. "Don't think of it all as one big bucket of snakes. Think of it as one snake at a time. Try to sort it out. Now, what needs to be done first? Everything. All right, try a different approach. What are those mind signs all about?" he said. "That helm clever sort of drew one at me. I saw one on the wall, too," said, "and you drew one." "The following dark," said Carrot. "Yes. It was scrawled all over the place." "What does it mean?" "Dread, sir," said Carrot earnestly. "A warning of terrible things to come. Well, if one of those little sods so much as surfaces with one of those flame weapons in his hand, that will be true." "But you mean they scrawl it on walls?" Carrot nodded. "You have to understand about a dwarf mind, sir. It's a kind of emotional hothouse," was how Vimes understood it, although no dwarf would ever describe it that way. "Humans would have gone insane living like that. Cramped together. No real privacy. No real silence. Seeing the same faces every day for years on end. And since there were a lot of pointy weapons around, it'd only be a matter of time before the ceilings dripped blood. Dwarfs didn't go mad. They stayed thoughtful and somber and keen on their job. But they scrawled mind sign. It was like an unofficial ballot. Voting by graffiti. Showing your views on what was going on. In the confines of a mine, any problem was everyone's problem. Stress slipped from dwarf to dwarf like lightning. The signs grounded it. They were an outlet, a release, a way of showing what you felt without changing anyone, because of all the pointy weapons. The following dark. We await what follows with dread. Another translation might mean, in effect, repent, ye sinners. There are hundreds of runes for darkness, said Carrot. Some of them are part of ordinary dwarfish, of course. Like the long dark. There's plenty of like that. But some are mystical, Vime suggested. Unbelievably mystical, sir. There's books and books about them. And the way dwarfs think about books and words and runes, well, you wouldn't believe it, sir. They think the world was written, sir. All words have enormous power. Destroying a book is worse than murder to a deep downer. I've rather gathered that, said Blackboard Monitor Vimes. Some deep downers believe that the dark signs are real, Carrot went on. Well, if you can see the writing on the wall, Vimes began. Real like alive, sir, said Carrot earnestly. Like they exist somewhere down in the dark under the world, and they cause themselves to be written. There's the waiting dark. That's the dark that fills a new hole. The closing dark. I don't know about that one. But there's an opening dark, too. The breaking dark, that's rare. The calling dark, very dangerous. The speaking dark, the catching dark. The secret dark, I've seen that. They're all fine. But the following dark is a very bad sign. I used to hear the older dwarfs talk about that. They said it could make lamps go out. And much worse things. When people start drawing that sign, things have got very bad. This is all very interesting, but everyone in the mine is nervous as heck, sir. Tense like wires. Angua said she could smell it, but so could I, sir. I grew up in a mine. When something is wrong, everyone catches it. On days like that, sir, my father used to stop all mining operation. You get too many accidents. Frankly, sir, the dwarfs are mad with worry. The following dark signs are everywhere. It's probably the miners they've hired since they came here. They feel that something is very wrong, but the only thing they can do about it is sign. Well, their top grog has been killed. I can feel the atmosphere in a mine, sir. Any dwarf can. And that one is rancid with fear and dread and horrible confusion. and there's worse things in the deeps than the following dark. Vimes had a momentary vision of vengeful darkness rising through caves like a tide, faster than a man could run. Which was stupid. You couldn't see darkness. Hold on, though. Sometimes you could. Back in the old days, when he was on nights all the time, he'd known all the shades of darkness, and sometimes you got darkness so thick that you almost felt you had to push your way through it. Those were nights when horses were skittish and dogs whined, and down in the slaughterhouse district, the animals broke out of their pens. They were inexplicable, just like those nights that were quite light and silver, even though there was no moon in the sky. He'd learned then not to use his little lantern. Light only ruined your vision. It blinded you. You stared into the dark until it blinked. You stared it down. Captain, I'm getting a bit lost here, said Vimes. I didn't grow up in a mine. Are these signs drawn up because dwarfs think bad things are going to happen and want to ward them off? Or think the mine deserves the bad things happening? Or because they want the bad things to happen? Can be all three at once, said Carrot, wincing. It can get really intense when a mine goes bad. Oh, good grief. Oh, it can be awful, sir, believe me. But no one would ever draw the worst of the signs and want it to happen. Just the drawing wouldn't be enough anyway. You have to want it to happen with your very last breath. And which one is that? Oh, you don't want to know, sir. No, I did ask, said Vimes. No, you don't. You really don't want to know, sir. Really. Vimes was about to start yelling, but he stopped to think for a moment. Actually, no, I don't think I do, he agreed. This is all about hysteria and mysticism. It's just weird folklore. Dwarfs believe it. I don't. So, how did you get the Verms to form that sign? Easy, sir. You just smear the wall with a piece of meat. That's a feast for Verms. I wanted to shake Ardent up a bit, make him nervous like you taught me. I wanted to show him I knew about signs. I am a dwarf, after all. Captain, this is probably not the time to break it to you, but... Oh, I know people laugh, sir. A 6-foot dwarf. But being a human just means being born to human parents. That's easy. Being a dwarf doesn't mean being born to dwarfs, so, though it's a good start. It's about certain things you can do. Certain ceremonies. I've done them. So I'm human and a dwarf. The deep downers find it a bit hard to deal with that. It's mystic again, is it? Said Vimes wearily. Oh, yes, sir. Carrot coughed. Vimes recognized that particular cough. It meant that bad news was on the captain's mind, and he was wondering how to shape it to fit the available not-going-totally-coastal space in Vimes' head. Out with it, Captain. This little chap turned up, said Carrot, opening his hand. The gooseberry imp sat up. I ran all the way, insert name here, it said proudly. We spotted it jogging along the gutters, said Carrot. It wasn't hard to see, glowing pale green like that. Vimes pulled the gooseberry box out of his pocket and put it on the floor. Nymph climbed inside. Oh, that feels so good, it said. Don't talk to me about rats and cats. They chased you, but you're a magical creature, aren't you? They don't know that, said the imp. Now, Oh, yes. You asked me about the night soil removal. Over the past 3 months, the extra honey wagon load has averaged 40 tons a night. 40 tons? That'd fill a big room. Why didn't we know about it? You did, insert name here, said the imp, proudly. But they were leaving from every gate, you see. And probably no guards ever spotted more than one or two extra carts. Yes, but they turned in reports every night. Why didn't we spot it? There was an awkward pause. Them coughed. No one read the reports, insert name here. They appear to be what we in the trade call write-only documents. Wasn't anyone supposed to be reading them? Vimes demanded. There was another thundering sound. I'd rather think you were, dear, said Sybil, paying attention to her darning. But I'm in charge, Vimes protested. Yes, dear, that's the point, really. But I can't spend all my time shuffling bits of paper. And then get someone else to do it, dear, said Sybil. Can I do that, said Vimes? Yes, sir, said Carrot. You're in charge. Vimes looked at the imp, which gave him a willing grin. Can you go through all of my entry floor, murmured Sybil. And tell me what's important? Happy to, insert name here. Only one question, insert name here. What is important? Well, the fact that the honey wagons are carting a whole lot more muck out of the city is pretty damn important, don't you think? I wouldn't know, insert name here, said the imp. I do not, in fact, think as such. But I surmise that if I had drawn your attention to such a fact a month ago, you would have told me to stick my head up a duck's bottom. That's true, said Vimes, nodding. I probably would. Captain Carrot? Sir, said Carrot, sitting up straight. What's the situation on the street? Well, troll gangs have been wandering around the city all day. Dwarfs, too. Now, a lot of the dwarfs are hanging around in the square, sir. And a fair number of trolls are congregating in the Plaza of Broken Moons. How many are we talking about here? Said Vimes. About 1,000, all told. They've been drinking, of course. Just in the mood for a fight, then. Yes, sir. Just drunk enough to be stupid, but too sober to fall over, said Carrot. Interesting observation, Captain, said Vimes thoughtfully. Yes, sir. The word is that they'll start at 9. Arrangements have been made, I gather. Then I think before it gets dark, there should be a load of coppers in the Cham. Right between them, don't you? Said Vimes. Get the word out to the watch houses. I've done that, sir, said Carrot. And get some barricades sorted out. All arranged, sir. And call out the specials? I put the word out an hour ago, sir. I hesitated. I've got to be there, Captain. We should have enough men, sir, said Carrot. But you won't have enough commander, said Vimes. If veterinary hauls me over the coals tomorrow because there was a major riot in the city center, I don't want to tell him I was having a quiet evening at home. He turned to his wife. Sorry, Sybil. Lady Sybil sighed. I think I shall have to have a word with Havelock about the hours he makes you keep, she said. It's not doing you any good, you know. It's a job, dear. Sorry. It's just as well I got the cook to make up a flask of soup then. You did? Of course. I know you, Sam. And there are some sandwiches in a bag. Captain Carrot, you are to make sure he eats the apple and the banana. Dr. Lund says he must eat at least 5 pieces of fruit or vegetable every day. Vimes stared woodenly at Carrot and Sally, trying to project the warning that the first officer to crack a smile or even mention this to anyone ever would have a very hard time of it indeed. And incidentally, tomato ketchup is not a vegetable, Sybil added. Not even the dried stuff around the top of the bottle. Well, what are you all waiting for, around for? There's something I didn't want to mention in front of her ladyship, said Carrot, as they hurried down to the yard. Hitherto is dead, sir. Who's hitherto? Lance Constable Horace Hitherto, sir. Got walloped on the back of the head last night when we were at the meeting. When there was that, disturbance. Got sent to the free hospital. Oh, God, said Vimes. It seems like a week ago. He'd only been with us a couple of months. They said at the hospital his brain died, sir. I'm sure they did their best. Did we do ours? Vimes wondered. But it was a bloody melee, and the cobblestone came out of nowhere. Could have hit me. Could have hit Carrot. Hit the kid instead. What'll I tell his parents? Killed in the line of duty. But his duty shouldn't have been to stop one lot of idiot citizens murdering another lot of idiot citizens. It's all got out of hand. There aren't enough of us, and now there's a few less. I'll go and see his mom and dad tomorrow, he began, and sluggish memory shifted at last. Didn't he have a brother in the watch? Yes, sir, said Carrot. Lance Constable Hector Hitherto, sir. They joined together. He's down at Chitling Street. Then get hold of his sergeant and tell him Hector is not allowed on the street tonight, okay? I want him introduced to the joys of filing, in a cellar if possible, and wearing a very thick helmet. I understand, sir, said Carrot. How's Angua? I think she'll be fine after having a lie down, sir. The mine really got to her. I'm really, really sorry about that, Sally began. Not your fault, Lance Constable, Sally, said Vimes. It was mine. I know about you, about the vampire and werewolf thing, but I needed you both to be down there. It's just one of those decisions, okay? I suggest you take the evening off. No, that's an order. You've done very well on your first day. Off you go. Get your head down, or whatever. They watched her get out of sight before continuing down the street. She is very good, sir, said Carrot. She picks things up fast. Yes, very fast. I can see she's going to be useful, said Vimes thoughtfully. Doesn't that strike you as odd, Captain? Up she pops just when we need her. She has been here for a couple of months, though, said Carrot, and the League vouches for her. A couple of months is about the same time as Ham Crusher has been here, too, said Vimes. And if you wanted to find things out, we're not a bad outfit to join. We're official prod noses. Sir, you don't think... Oh, I'm sure she's a black hermiter. But I don't think a vampire comes all the way from Riverwald to play the cello. Still, as you say, she does a good job. Vimes stared at nothing for a moment, and then said thoughtfully, Doesn't one of our specials work for the Clax Company? That'd be Andy Hancock, sir, said Kara. Oh, gods, you mean Two Swords? That's him, sir. Very keen lad. Yes, I saw the dockets. Normally, a training dummy lasts for a month, Captain. You're not supposed to chop through three in half an hour. He'll be down on the yard now, sir. Do you want a word with him? Said Carrot. No, you have a word with him. Vimes lowered his voice. So did Carrot. There was whispering. Then Carrot said, Is that strictly legal, sir? I don't see why not. Let's find out, shall we? We haven't had this little conversation, Captain. Understood, sir. You gods, it was so much better when there were just four of us up against the bloody great dragon. Vimes thought as they walked on. Of course, we nearly got burned alive a few times, but at least it wasn't complicated. It was a damn great dragon. You could see it coming. It didn't get political on you.
Yeah, it started to rain a fine invasive rain by the time
they arrived at Ptudopolis Yard. Vimes had, with extreme reluctance, to hand it to Carrot. He certainly could organize it. The place was bustling. Wagonloads of yellow and black barricades were being trundled out of the old lemonade factory. Watchmen were pouring in from every street. I really pushed the boat out on this one, sir, said Carrot. I thought it was important. Well done, Captain, said Vimes, as they stood like islands in the flood. But I think there's a little matter of forward planning you may have overlooked. Really, sir, I thought I covered everything, said Carrot, looking puzzled. Vimes slapped him on the back. Probably not this one, he said, but only to himself, because you, Captain, are not a bastard. Bewildered and aimless, the troll wandered through the world. Brick's head had really gonged. He didn't want to be doing this, but he'd fallen into bad company. He often fell into bad company, he reflected, although sometimes he had to look all day to find it, because Brick was a loser's loser. A troll without a clan or a gang, and who is considered thick even by other trolls, has to take any bad company he can find. In this case, he'd met Totally Slag and Hardcore and Big Marble, and it had been easier to fall in with them than decide not to. And they'd met up with more trolls. And now, look at it like this, he thought as he trudged along singing gang songs a bit behind the beat because he didn't know the words. All right, being in the middle of this mob of trolls ain't lying low. That is a fact, but Totally Slag had said the word was that their watch was also after their troll who'd been down that mine, right? And if you think about it, their best place to hide a troll, right, is a big bunch of trolls, cause the watch would be poking around in their cellars where the real mean trolls hung out. They wouldn't be looking here. And if they did, and were putting their finger on him, then all these brother trolls would help him out. He wasn't too certain about that last bit in his heart of hearts. His possibly negative IQ, complete absence of street cred, and above all, his permanent inclination to snort, suck, swallow, or bite anything that promised to make his brain sparkle, meant that he had been turned down, even by the 10th Egg Street. Can't think of a name gang, rumored to be so dense that one of their members was a lump of concrete on a piece of string. No, it would be hard to imagine any troll caring much about much what happened to Brick. But right now, they were brothers, and they were only game in town. He nudged the skull necklace, graffiti-ornamented, lichen-covered, huge club-dragging troll marching stoically alongside him. Respect, bro, he said, clenching a scabby fist. Why don't you go and gook yourself, Brick? You little piece of copperlight, the troll muttered. Right off, said Brick, cheerfully. The main office was packed. but Vimes fought his way through by shoving and shouting until he reached the duty desk, which was under siege. "It looks worse than it is, sir," shouted Cherry over the din. "Detritus and Constable Bluejohn are in the chain right now, along with all three Gollum officers. We've started getting the line in place, but the mobs are too busy getting themselves worked up. Good work, Sergeant." Cherry leaned down and lowered her voice. Vimes had to hang on to the tall desk to stop himself being carried away by the throng. "Fred Cullen's signing up the specials in the old lemonade factory, sir, and Mr. DeWord of the Times is looking for you." "Sorry, Sergeant, didn't catch that last bit," said Vimes loudly. "Lemonade factory, right? Okay." He turned around and almost tripped over Mr. A.E. Passmore, who was holding a neat clipboard. "Ah, Your Grace. There's just a few small matters I'd like to discuss with you," said the gleaming little man. Vimes's mouth dropped open. "And you think this is a good time, do you?" he managed as he was jostled by an officer carrying a bundle of swords. "Well, yes, I've turned up a number of little financial and procedural problems," said A.E. Passmore calmly. "And I think it's vitally important that I understand exactly what..." Vimes, grinning horribly, grabbed him by the shoulder. "Yes, right, absolutely," he shouted. "My dear Mr. Passmore, what have I been thinking of? You should understand. Come with me, please." He half-dragged the bolder man out through the back door, lifted him out of the way of a trundling cart as he negotiated the crowded yard, and hustled him into the old factory yard, where the specials were being kitted up. Technically, they were the citizens' militia, but as Fred Cullen had remarked, it was better to have them in here pissing themselves than outside pissing on you. The special constables were men, mostly, who could be coppers in times of dire need, but were generally disqualified from formal watch membership by reason of shape, profession, age, or sometimes brain. A lot of the professionals didn't like them, but Vimes had lately taken the view that when push came to shove, it was better to have your fellow citizens shoving alongside you, and that being the case, you might as well teach them how to hold a sword right, lest the arm they clumsily remove was yours. Vimes pulled A.E. Passmore through the press of bodies until he found Fred Cullen, who was handing out one-size-doesn't-fit-anybody helmets. "New man for you, Fred," he said loudly. "Mr. A.E. Passmore, Plan A.E. If he ever makes friends. He's the government inspector. Kit him out, full fig. And don't forget the riot shield. A.E. here wants to understand coppering, so he's kindly volunteered to be an acting constable on the barricades with us." Over the top of A.E. Passmore's head, he gave Fred a big wink. "Oh, right," said Fred, and his face, in the flickering light of the flares, acquired the innocent smile of one about to make someone's life a little pot of bubbling dread. He leaned over the trestle table. "Know how to use a sword, Acting Constable Passmore," he said, and dropped a helmet on the man's head, where it spun. "Well, the inspector began as a very elderly sword was shoved across the planks, followed by a heavy truncheon. "A shield, then. Any good with a shield," said Fred, pushing a large such item after the sword. "Actually, I didn't mean," said A.E. Passmore, trying to hold both the sword and the truncheon and dropping both. And then the sword and the truncheon and the shield and dropping all three. "Any good at running 100 yards in 10 seconds is in this?" Fred went on. A ragged chainmail coat dropped slowly off the table like a parcel of snakes and landed on A.E. Passmore's bright little shoes. "I don't think so." "Standing still and going to the toilet really, really quickly," said Fred. "Oh, well, you'll learn soon enough." Vimes turned the man around, picked up 35 pounds of rust-eaten chainmail, and dropped it into his arms, causing A.E. Passmore to bend double. "I'll introduce you to some of the citizens who will be fighting alongside you tonight, shall I?" he said as the little man hobbled after him. "This is Willikins, my butler. No sharpened pennies in your cap tonight, Willikins?" "No, sir," said Willikins, staring at the struggling A.E. Passmore. "Glad to hear it. This is Acting Constable Passmore, Willikins," Vimes winked. "Honored to meet you, Acting Constable, sir," said Willikins gravely. "Now that sir is with us, I am sure the miscreants will just melt away. Has sir by any chance gone sir on one with a troll before?" "No." "A little advice, sir. The important thing is to get in front of them and dodge the first blow. They always leave themselves open, and Sir may then step smartly forward and select Sir's target of choice. Or what if I'm not in front of one when he tries to hit me? A, Passamul said, hypnotized by the description and dropping the sword again. What if it is, in fact, behind me? Well, I'm afraid that in that case, Sir has to go back and start all over again, Sir. Or how do I do that? Being born is traditionally the first step, Sir, said Wilkins, shaking his head. Vimes gave him a nod and moved to the trembling Passamul on through the chattering crowd, while the fine rain fell and the mists rose and the torches flickered. Good evening, Sir, said a cheerful voice. And there, yes, was Special Constable Hancock, an amiable bearded man, with an amiable smile, and more cutlery about his person than was good for Vimes' mental health. That was the trouble with some of the specials. They really got into it. They bought their own gear, and it was always better than watch issue. Some of them clanged even more than dwarfs, with patent handcuffs and complicated nightsticks and comfy padded helmets, and pencils that wrote underwater, and, in the case of Special Constable Hancock, two curved agatean swords strapped across his back. Those who dared to venture into the training yard when he was using them said they looked rather impressive. Vimes had heard that an Agatean ninja could give a fly shave and a haircut in mid-flight, but this didn't make him feel any better. Oh, hello, Andy, he said. I think Captain Carrots had a word with me, said Special Constable Hancock, giving him a huge wink. I'll see to it. Oh, good, said Vimes, horribly aware that he'd put himself in a tricky position, vis-a-vis suggesting that maybe one sword might be enough. The man was going to be up to do them a favor, after all. You'll be up against the trolls, at least to start with, he said. Just remember that there's our people around you, will you? Remember Special Constable Piggle, eh? But in fairness, it was a clean cut, sir, said Hancock. Igor said he'd never done such an easy reattachment. Nevertheless, it's truncheons only tonight, Andy, unless I give any other order, okay? Understand, Commander Vimes. I've just got a new truncheon, as a matter of fact. Some sixth sense, maybe Vimes said. Oh, really? May I see? Right here, sir. Hancock pulled out what looked to Vimes like two truncheons, joined together with a length of chain. They're Agatean numb nuts, sir. No sharp edges at all. Vimes gave them an experimental swing and hit his own elbow. He handed them back quickly. Rather you than me, lad. Still, I suppose they'll make a troll stop and think. Mr. Passamul was staring in horror, not least because Wayward Wood had just missed him. Oh, this is Mr. Passamul, Andy, said Vimes. He's finding out how we do things. Mr. Hancock is one of our keenest special constables, Mr. Passamul. Nice to meet you, Mr. Passamul, said Hancock. If you need any weapons catalogs, I'm your man. Vimes moved on quickly, just in case the man drew those swords again, and ran up against a slightly more reassuring figure. And here we have Mr. Boggess, he said. Good to see you, Mr. Boggess. Mr. Boggess is president of the Guild of Thieves, Mr. Passamul. Mr. Boggess saluted proudly. He had accepted a chainmail jacket from Fred, but no power in the world would have parted him from his brown bowler hat. Any power nevertheless inclined to try would in any case have to contend with the narrow-eyed, stony-jawed man on either side of him, who had eschewed any weapons or armor. One of them was cleaning his fingernails with a cutthroat razor. It was a strange but very definite way that looked much more dangerous even than Special Constable Hancock. And also, Vinny No-Ears Ludd and Harry can't remember his nickname, Jones, I see. Vimes went on. You've brought your bodyguards, Mr. Boggess. Vinny and Harry like to get out in the fresh air, Mr. Vimes, said Mr. Boggess. And I see you've got your own bodyguard, then. He beamed down at A.E. Passamul and then grinned at Vimes. You have to watch them little bantam fighters, Mr. Vimes. They can have the nose off your face quicker in a wink. I can tell a killing cove when I see one, eh? Best of luck to you, Mr. Passimal. Vimes bustled the astonished man away before Mr. Bogus was killed on the spot by the god of overacting, and almost walked into the one special who could be guaranteed not to talk too much. And here, Mr. Passimal, here we have the university librarian, he said. Good man in a melee, eh? But that's not a man. That's an orangutan. Pongo, Pongo. Native to Bang Bang Duck and nearby islands. I think I need to stop there. I'm gonna take some air down and I'll start your recording. Oh. But that's not a man. That's an orangutan. Pongo Pongo, native of Bang Bang Duck and nearby islands. Ooks, said the librarian, patting A.E. Passimal on the head and handing him a banana skin. Well done, A.E., said Vimes. Not many people get that right. And so Vimes dragged the inspector back through the crowd of damp, armored men, introducing him right and left. Then he pushed him into a corner and, to faint stunned protestations, dragged the male shirt over his head. You sit close behind me, Mr. Passimal, he said as the man tried to move. It could get a bit sticky later on. The trolls are up in the plaza and the dwarfs are down in the square. And both of them are drinking up enough courage to have a good scrap. That's why we'll be lining up in the cham, right between them. The thin brown streak, haha. The dwarfs favor battle axes. The trolls go in for clubs. Our weapon of first resort will be our truncheons. And our weapon of last resort is our feet. That is to say, we'll run like hell. But you have swords, A. Passimal managed. We have swords, acting constable, yes. That is a fact. But poking holes in citizens is watch brutality, and we don't want any of that now, do we? Let's get going. I wouldn't like you to miss anything. He harried the man again, and out into the street, and the stream of watchmen heading for the jail. Apart from them, the street was empty. Hunk Morpork people had an instinct for staying indoors when there were too many battle axes and spiky clubs out there. The Cham was simply a very, very wide road, once intended for ceremonial parades, a hangover from the days when the city had much to be ceremonious about. Drizzle filled it now, and did not do much more than wet the pavements and reflect the light of the flares along the barricades. Barricades, well, that's what they were called on the watch inventory, huh? Lengths of wood painted in black and yellow stripes and mounted on trestles were not barricades, not to anyone who'd been behind a real one, which was built of rubbish and furniture and barrels and fear and bow-nodding defiance. No, these simple things were the physical symbol of an idea. It was a line in the sand. It said, thus far and no further. It said, this is where the law is. Step over this line and you've gone beyond the law. Step over this line, with your massive axes and huge morning stars and heavy, heavy spiky clubs, and we few, we happy few who stand here with our wooden truncheons will, you just better not step over the line, okay? The yellow and black edges of the law had been set about 12 feet apart, giving plenty of room for two lines of watchmen standing back to back, facing outwards. Vimes dragged Mr. Passimal into the center of the cham between the lines and let him go. Any questions, he said, as latecomers jostled past them to take up their positions. The little man stared toward the distant plaza, where the trolls had lit a big fire, and then turned to look the other way at the square, where the dwarfs had lit several fires. There was a sound of distant singing. Oh, yes, we'll get the singing first. At this point, it's all about getting the blood pounding, you see, Vimes added helpfully. Songs about heroes, great victories, killing your enemies and drinking out of their warm skulls. That sort of thing. And then, they attack us, said A. Passimal. Well, not as such, Vimes conceded. They'll try to attack the other bunch, and we're in the way. They won't go around, perhaps, said A. Pessimal, hopefully. I doubt it. They won't be in the mood for narrow alleys. They'll be thinking in straight lines. Charge and yell, they'll say. That's the way. Ah, there's the university over there, said A. Pessimal, as if noticing the huge bulk of unseen university for the very first time. Surely the wizards could magic their weapons out of their hands, possibly leaving them with all their fingers. Magic them into the cells. Turn them all into ferrets. And what then, Mr. Pessimal? Vimes lit a cigar, cupping the match in his hand, so the flame might have made his face glow brightly, briefly. Shall we follow where the magic leads us? Wave a wand, eh? To find out who's guilty and what of. Magic men good. The innocent would have nothing to fear, do you think? I wouldn't bet tuppence, Mr. Pessimal. Magic's a bit alive, a little... A little bit tricky. Just when you think you've got it by the throat, it bites you in the arse. No magic in my watch, Mr. Pessimal. We use good old-fashioned policing. But there are lots of them, Commander. About 1,000 altogether, I reckon, said Vimes placidly. Plus, who knows how many more there are out there who will wail in if we let it get out of hand. This is just the hotheads and the gangs right now. But can't you just leave them to it? No, Mr. Pessimal. Because that would be what we in the Watch call complete and utter bloody chaos. And it will not stop. And it will get bigger very quickly. We have to finish it right now, so... There was a thud from the direction of the plaza. It was loud enough to echo around the buildings. What was that? A. Pessimal said, looking around hurriedly. Oh, that was to be expected, said Vimes. Pessimal relaxed very slightly. It was? Yeah, it's the Ghanka. The troll warbeat, said Vimes. They say that within 10 minutes of hearing it, you're dead. Behind Pessimal... Detritus grinned, the torchlight turning his diamond teeth into rubies. Is that true? I shouldn't think so, said Vimes. And now, please excuse me for a while, acting Constable Pessimal. I'll leave you in the good hands of Sergeant Detritus while I talk to my men, stiffen their sinews, that sort of thing. He moved away quickly. He told himself he shouldn't be doing this to the inspector, who was just a clerk in the wrong place and probably wasn't a bad man. The trouble was, the trolls up in the plaza probably weren't bad trolls, and the dwarfs down in the square probably weren't bad dwarfs either. People who probably weren't bad could kill you. The troll beat boomed around the city as Vimes reached for Fred Cullen. I see they're giving us the old Ghanka, then, Mr. Vimes, said the sergeant, with nervous cheerfulness. Yep, they'll be charging pretty soon, I expect. Vimes screwed up his eyes, trying to see figures around the distant glow. Trolls didn't charge fast, but when they charged, it was like a wall getting nearer. Extending a hand and shouting, halt, in a firm, authoritative voice, probably would not be sufficient. You thinking about another barricade, Mr. Vimes? Said Fred. Said Vimes, dismissing the mental picture of himself laminated to the street. Barricades, sir, Colin prompted. More than 30 years ago? Vimes gave him a curt nod. Oh, yes, he remembered the glorious revolution. It hadn't really been a revolution, and had been glorious only if you thought an early grave was glorious. Men who died there, too, because of other men who, bar one or two, probably weren't bad. Yes, he said, and it seems like only yesterday. Every day, he thought, it seems like only yesterday. Remember old Sergeant Keel? He pulled off a few tricks that night, Sergeant Cullen's voice, like A.A. Pessimal's, had a curiously hopeful tone. Vimes nodded. I suppose you wouldn't have one or two up your sleeve, too, sir. Fred went on. The hope, how naked and unashamed. The hope now naked and unashamed. You know me, Fred. Always willing to learn, said Vimes vaguely. He strolled on, nodding to watchmen he knew, slapping others on the back, and trying not to get trapped in anyone's gaze. Every face was in the same, in some way, a reflection of the face of Fred Coleman. You could practically see their thoughts, while the thud of 500 clubs hitting the stone in unison banged on the eardrums like a hammer. You have to get it sorted, haven't you? You have got it sorted, haven't you, Mr. Vimes? We're not really going to be stuck here like the meat in a sandwich, right? It's a trick, yes. It is a trick, isn't it, sir? I hope it is, Vimes thought. But one way or another, the watch has to be here. That's the bloody truth of it. Something had changed in the rhythm of the honka. You had to be listening. But some of the clubs were hitting the ground just ahead of, or just after the beat. Ah. He reached Sherry and Carrot, who were staring at the distant buyers of the doors. We think we might be getting a result, sir, said Carrot. I damn well hope so. What's happening with the doors? Not so much singing, sir, Sherry reported. Glad to hear it. We could handle them, though. Couldn't we? Sir, said Carrot, with the Gollum officers on our side too. If it came to it. Of course we couldn't, Vimes' mind supplied, not if they mean it. What we could is die valiantly. I've seen men die valiantly. There's no future to it. I don't want it to come to it, Captain, Vimes stopped. A deeper shadow had moved among the shadows. What's the password? He said quickly. The shadowy figure, who was cloaked and hooded, hesitated. Password? Excuse me. I've got it written down somewhere, it began. Okay, Igor, come on in, said Carrot. How did you know it with me, sir? Said Igor, ducking under the barricade. Your aftershave, said Vimes, winking at the captain. How did it go? Just as you said, sir, said Igor, pushing his head back, his hood back. Incidentally, sir, I have scrubbed the slab well, and my cousin Igor is standing on a by to lend a hand, in case any little accident, sir. Thank you for thinking of that, Igor, said Vimes, as if Igor's ever thought of anything else. I hope it won't be needed. He looked up and down the chain. The rain was falling harder now. Just once, the copper's friend had turned up when he really needed it. Rain tended to dampen martial enthusiasm. Anyone seen Nobby? He said. A voice from the shadows said, Here, Mr. Vimes. Been here 5 minutes. Why didn't you sing out then? Couldn't remember the password, sir. I thought I'd wait till I heard Igor say it. Oh, come on in. Did it work? Better than you'd imagine, sir, said Nobby, rain pouring down his cloak. Vimes stood back. Okay, lads. Then this is me and Detritus. Then this is it. Carrot and Cherry, you head for the dwarfs. Me and Detritus will take the trolls. You know the drill. Lines to advance slowly, and no edged weapons. I repeat, no edged weapons until it's that or die. Let's do this like coppers, okay? On the signal. He hurried back up the line of barricades as fast as the stir ran along the ranks of the watchmen. Detritus was waiting stoically. He grunted when Vimes arrived. Clubs have just about stopped, sir, he reported. I heard, Sergeant. Vimes took off his oiled leather cloak and hung it on the barricade. He needed his arms free. By the way, how did it go in Turnagain Lane? He said, stretching and breathing deeply. Oh, wonderful, sir, said Detritus happily. 6 alchemists and 50 pounds of fresh slide. And in and out, quick and sweet. All banged up in the tanty. Didn't know what hit him, eh? Said Vimes. Detritus looked mildly offended at this. Oh, no, sir, he said. I made sure they knew I hit him. And then Vimes spotted Mr. Pestmole, still where he had left him, his face a pale disk in the shadows. Well, enough of that game. Maybe the little tit would have learned something standing here in the rain, waiting to be caught between a couple of screaming mobs. Maybe he'd had time to wonder what it was like to spend your life going through moments like that. About a bit harder than pushing paper, eh? If I was you, I just wait here, Mr. Pessimal, he said, as kindly as he could manage. This might be a bit rough in parts. No, Commander, said A.E. Pessimal, looking up. What? I have been paying attention to what has been said, and intend to face the foe, Commander, said A.E. Pessimal. Now see here, Mr. Pessimal, see here, A.E., said Fimes, putting his hand on the little man's shoulder. He stopped. A.E. Pessimal was trembling so much that his chainmail was faintly jingling. Fimes persevered. Look, go on home, eh? This isn't where you belong. He patted the shoulder a few times, totally nonplussed. Commander Vimes, snapped the inspector. Yes? A. Pessimal turned up to Vimes. A face wetter than the drizzle rightly accounted for. I am an acting constable, am I not? Well, yes, I know I said that, but I did not expect you to take it seriously. I am a serious man, Commander Vimes, and there is no place I would rather be now than here, Acting Constable Pessimal said, his teeth chattering, and no time I'd rather be here than now. Let's do this, shall we? Vimes looked at Detritus, who shrugged his massive shoulders. Something was happening here, in the mind of a little man whose back he could probably break with one hand. Oh, well, if you say so, he said hopelessly. You heard the inspector, Sergeant Detritus. Let's do this, shall we? The troll nodded and turned to face the distant troll encampment. He cupped his hands and bellowed a string of tollish, which bounced off the buildings. Something we can all understand, perhaps, said Vimes, as the echoes died away. A.E. Pessimal stepped forward, taking a deep breath. Come on, if you think you're hard enough, he screamed wildly. Vimes coughed. Thank you, Mr. Pessimal, he said weakly. I imagine that should do it.